When President Bush gave Saddam Hussein and his sons 48 hours to leave Iraq or face a U.S.-led attack, he cited earlier United Nations Security Council resolutions as the authority needed for war. The idea that even without a new Security Council resolution, the war is legal is actually up for debate. Russian President Vladimir Putin and UN Secretary General Kofi Annan have both publicly questioned the legality of this war. Joining us now from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts at Harvard University's Law School is Professor of International Law David Kennedy, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What is international law? Who makes it? And is there a court that decides it?
All good questions. In fact, international law is much more like a conversation than a trial. It's made mostly by the people who use it. They have a catalog of arguments that people use in assessing the legitimacy of what states do, rooted in treaties like the UN Charter, custom, prior practice. It's the kind of thing that people are going to differ always about what it means. Nevertheless, if states do become perceived to have violated international law, it can affect the legitimacy of what they do.
Mm-hmm. What is the argument for the legality of this conflict?
There are basically two that you mentioned in your opening remarks, Neil. The first, put forward by the American and the British, relies on the earlier Security Council resolutions, and they argue that Iraq has violated the 1991 ceasefire, and the Security Council then had authorized enforcement, and they're now taking up that burden.
Mm-hmm.
The second is put forward by the Americans, but interestingly not by the British. It's based on the inherent right of self-defense of every state, guaranteed by the UN Charter.
Article 51, I think.
Article 51, exactly. President Bush asserted in his address the other night that Iraq poses a threat to his neighbors and in a post-9/11 world to the United States. And therefore, preemptive action is both authorized and necessary.
And the argument against?
Well, again, too, on self-defense, most nations read Article 51 far more narrowly than we do. They assert that self-defense requires a more immediate threat than that posed by Iraq today, and many don't accept the Bush administration's claim that preemptive self-defense is ever legitimate. On the Security Council side, I think...
And just in fairness, on that side, if you read the Article 51, it would seem to support that position. Doesn't it say an attack is required?
Well, it mentions that self-defense in case of armed attack, but the United States has since the 40s always said that we don't need to wait until the bomb hits the ground. In the nuclear age, the U.S. has always accepted that they could take preemptive action if they felt an attack was imminent. Our view, increasingly expansive of that, has been acquiesced in by other countries, hasn't been agreed to, but at least has been deferred to.
Okay. Now, is there anywhere that this dispute might be decided, or is this just going to be, lawyers who disagree with other lawyers?
Well, I should say first that the opponents have another strong argument based on the UN Charter, in which they argue that the broad purposes of the Charter and the intentions of the people who voted for those Gulf War resolutions were never meant to authorize this kind of unilateral action. But you point to the most interesting question, which is how would this be resolved? And the most important court turns out to be the Court of World Public Opinion for International Law. During the war and thereafter, American action will be interpreted, and U.S. power and influence will be affected by how what we do is perceived.
We're talking with David Kennedy, a professor at the Harvard Law School, about the issue of the legality of the conflict that may begin as soon as tonight in Iraq. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have an email question from Ron Cook in San Antonio. What is the governing body that administers and interprets international law, he writes, and how is international law enforced?
Well, there's no one governing body. International law is taken up by institutions all over the world, by citizens' groups, by national courts, by national parliaments. It's a way of drawing our attention to a number of issues that might be important, how we should think about consistency over time in our foreign policy, how what we do today might come back to haunt us. But it's not always the best or even a very good ultimate measure of the legitimacy of the war.
What about the new international court that has been set up?
There's a new international criminal court that focuses more on, to which the United States is not a party as of yet, focuses much more on the activity of figures during war, on war crimes that people may be accused of committing in the course of a war rather than on a question about the legitimacy of the war itself in the first instance.
I see. Here's another email question, this one from David Fetter. I'm very confused by the common term international law, he writes. I was under the impression that law was a set of rules and one single chain of authority to make sure that they're not broken using force up to and including the use of lethal force. How can there be law amongst sovereign nations?
A very good question, and a classic one for international law. It turns out it's a horizontal system in which people who interact with one another every day on a diplomatic level develop norms and ideas about what's legitimate in one another's behavior, and those norms over time come to be treated as if they were law. But it is confusing when we talk about it as if it were a top-down vertical system that we're used to having inside our own nation state. It doesn't work quite like that.
Are there precedents for this? You talked about the unusual aspects of the U.S.-led attack in Iraq. Are there precedents for it?
Well, no one aspect of the situation is completely new. What's new is that unilateral action, preemptive self-defense, a new assertion of American authority in the world have all been brought together more forcefully than they ever have been before. And that stretches the notion of self-defense, as I've mentioned, and it also changes our sense of what's possible multilaterally. And I think the question of whether this is good or bad for multilateralism in the world is one that's on many people's minds at the moment.
Is there any sense of consensus amongst people who study international law? Now, you said presumably this is going to be decided in the court of public opinion, and much will depend on what's the conduct of the war on both sides, what's found inside Iraq,
and, of course,
all of that, which may come out in the next days and weeks. But before the war begins, is there a majority opinion amongst those who study international law?
I think there are three positions out there now, very briefly. There's a continuity position that says this is a setback for the United Nations, but of a piece with other Bush administration initiatives, and multilateralism has survived worse in the past, and when the U.S. needs the U.N., it'll be back. I think there's a stronger catastrophe view that for multilateralism and therefore also for American foreign policy, the progress toward on this basis at this time has been a terrible mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a third somewhat paradoxical view, which I think to me makes a lot of sense, that in an odd way this strengthens multilateralism in two ways. A rogue regime will be eliminated, and it will be more difficult in the future for the United States to act unilaterally.
Hmm.
We've used up a great deal of moral and political capital, and from a unilateral, from a multilateral point of view, that may not all be a bad thing.
Let's get a quick question from Bill in Pocatello, Idaho.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Bill.
I have a question. The Security Council resolutions are cited over and over again by the Bush administration. Is there any specific language in any of the resolutions that gives any UN member state the right to take action to place a bounty on the head of Saddam Hussein, or do they merely refer to disarmament?
Neither in those specific terms. There's certainly nothing that would authorize explicitly the United States or any other power to target a head of state in any kind of conflict. What the Security Council resolutions do, first establishing it's a very long resolution, the one that they're referring to, establishes a wide range of conditions that Iraq must meet as part of the ceasefire after the Gulf War, and authorizes action to enforce the resolution by members of the Security Council. And that was explicitly intended to allow the coalition forces at that time to continue to operate militarily and enforce what had been decided. Whether it was intended to still be active in this kind of situation 12 years later is exactly what the dispute today is about.
David Kennedy, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
David Kennedy is the Henry Shattuck Professor of Law at Harvard Law School. He directs the European Law Research Center there. His newest book is called The Dark Sides of International Humanitarianism, and he spoke with us from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.